Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special Locker Room Access mailbag edition. Joining us tonight, TW, the producer, CEO, Dougie Fresh, and myself, Mark Jerome. Also joining us will be Chris Havlicek and special subscriber, Dumont Walker, also known as B-Dragon. Welcome, B. How are you?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on. We've got some great questions from the UVA Locker Room Access audience, and we're very grateful for that. T Dubs, are we starting this with a question from the crowd, or are we starting this with B Dragon?
Oh, we can start with Dragon. How about that? I'll let you. So we're gonna do a mailbag blog, which we'll link it in the description below, and this thing will be added to the blog itself that Who's Got Next is running, and that's mostly the recruiting questions. But let's let my man Dragon kick it off.
Well, before he does, mm-hmm. We just learned that three of us on this podcast have sons named Ty. Amazing. Dragon's son is Ty. Dougie Fletcher's son is Ty.
I got a daughter named Ty.
He has a daughter. We have three of us have kids named Ty. Sorry, yep. B-Drag.
No worries.
Our kids just have the same spelling, and Dougie Fresh's son is spelling is, what's the spelling of little Ty?
Tyzinho. T-E-T-Y. Same way. Ty. I try to keep it easy, but it's not going so well in writing his name for school. He's got like a Y in the upper left side and a T in the middle of the page. So.
And the other connection, Dougie, of course, is you wore 11 at UVA, and yep. Ty Jerome wore 11 at UVA.
The 11s, that's right.
Who's 11 now? I saw on the new practice video, who's wearing 11 now?
The St. Anne's kid. I trust me, I looked it up immediately.
Poindexter?
Oh.
Poindexter. Malachi Poindexter, okay.
Yep.
I can't believe, Dougie, that they didn't retire that number after you left campus.
I do. I'm telling you what. I cannot wait until Ty Jerome's jersey is retired, and it's like my jersey's up there. I cannot wait.
Get back there, just get yourself right up there.
Me and Richard Morgan, trust me. Between those two, they should just—that's enough.
B Dragon, well, when your daughter comes to UVA to play point guard, she has to wear 11.
Oh, for sure.
We're going to have to fight with her mom about that. She wants her to wear 45 like she did in college, but. I think we can break it and get an 11 on her.
and Dougie Fresh, of course, Lil Ty will wear 11 as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure what sport he's going to play, but I agree with that. He'll be 11.
Hey, fellas, I'm joining late. I'm happy to be here. Hair and makeup was running late. I'm not my normal self, but happy to join you and be Dragon. What's up, man? Good to be here with y'all.
Are we going to fire somebody?
You know, 6:30 is a tough time with the travel sports schedule in the Havlicek household, but I'm happy to be here. We got it done. I didn't get to exfoliate or moisturize, but, you know, I'm just trying to look like you, Mark, smooth and young.
Don't do that.
I was expecting baby oils of some sort tonight, Hav, and maybe a
cowboy hat.
Well, I've got gear, but I do want to chime in on one thing. So we've had, you know, those polls go up on the website, like best dunk in UVA history, top 3-point shooter. The fact that Doug Fresh was in the best hair category, which was recently, makes everything look illegitimate to me. That's like naming me best dunker or, you know, big red best ball handler. You know, it lost a little bit of credibility. But I will say, for the first 2 weeks of freshman year, he had the best hair.
See, that's what it goes back to. It's like it's over the course of your career. What's your like?
Yeah. It's that one haircut that was good, not in totality. It's just that. He had a good 2-week stretch.
He had a great 14-day run. Great 14-day run in Tuttle. It was good, but you know, it's been down. That part of his life has been downhill ever since. But we still love him.
Thanks, Hav. The bone fade.
All right. So Hav, we're just gonna kick off with some questions. We've got some from Twitter and from the forum, but Dragon's gonna kick it off with the live question.
All right, I'll jump right in. This is one that's been churning around in my head for a while, but Who's the on-court leader of this year's team coming in? Who is it? Is it Kie? Is it, you know, in the past, you got to have that guy when the chips are down who can get the locker room's attention. It's usually, sometimes it can be your best player, sometimes it's not. Who is it on this team? Because I don't know if we had it last season. I really question that. And who is it this year?
That's got to be Mark. You got to, you've seen some practices. You've seen more than anyone.
Kihei's got a great relationship with the former guys. He's the, I would say he's the elder member, elder statesman of the team, right? Along with Sam Hauser and Jay Huff. But Kihei is the point guard, and he's got that personality and that attitude. You remember he was the starting point guard in the national championship team, and now he's 2 years removed from there, 2 years older. And even last year, I completely agree with you. That was one of the pieces that was missing, where there wasn't a clear leader. And when the time, in the beginning of the season, they struggled. And I think you saw some guys emerging toward the middle of and toward the end of the season as that leader, which is such a valuable role to have on a team. Any successful team has a great leader. And you see Kihei, I've just heard and have watched him a little bit and talked to him. And even when he was on our podcast, T-Dubs, he just sounded so mature and so confident, and he's just ready to roll. He's got a great connection, as I said, with some of the former guys, and that you can tell that there's communication about what happened when the older former guys played and what's going on now. And you can tell these guys really communicate thoroughly about that and how to deal with the coaching staff.
That's awesome. No, that makes sense. It would have been my guess, as I said, but I'm really excited to see him step into that role, become that vocal leader. I wouldn't mind throwing a dark horse out there in Hauser, just because feel like from what I've read, he gets so much positive feedback from everyone on the squad, and he's just got a ton of experience. He just hasn't been in a UVA uniform.
Yeah, I wonder how him coming from the outside. From him coming from the outside, so he didn't do first year Tuttle, doesn't exist anymore, I get it. Second year this, like, was he like, when I saw one practice, whatever, he was not very vocal, Sam. He was very, very good, Sam. So, you know, a leader's got to walk the walk as probably more than you have to talk the talk. So I wonder if his voice will become bigger, to your point, Dragon.
Yeah, and I would add one thing. You know, last year, because of COVID, we got robbed of kind of the best part of the season, which is end of the year ACC tournament, and then NCAA. And that's really where you see players, the culmination of their efforts come through. I think we would have seen that, you know, out of Kihei last year. And one other thing I'd say is the fans see the 30 games you play a year, right? That's on TV. That's on, you can watch it on your computer. There's articles about it. What they don't see is all the leadership behind the scenes. Right. And he is now, as Mark mentioned, you know, he's coming up on a year and a half post national championship. In that time, the amount of leadership that he has displayed and the amount of leadership that he sort of governs over is probably phenomenal. We don't know because we don't see it, but so much happens behind the scenes. And just as a player's jump shot develops in the offseason, if you're a leader, your leadership will develop. And I think he'll be a terrific leader for this team this year.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I like that. I like that idea.
That's good. I'll just jump in with another somewhat related Twitter question. Who's the best pregame dunker you guys have played with? This person, who's football, said Dirk Castro was the GOAT when he was in school. But you guys both play with him. Is that a true statement?
Oh, it's not even a question. He, like, if you jumped against Dirk when he's coming to dunk, you might get hurt. He had these big, strong legs. He got really strong as his career went on. And he just became a ferocious, like a mad dunker, like wanted to like hurt people on his dunks. Absolutely. And he put on a show in U-Haul.
He was legit. Dirk was like when you're in sixth grade and you go to the Museum of Fine Arts or wherever, and you see the Greek statues of the guys.
Yes. Yes.
That was Dirk. He had the same body. He was a strong dude, big time hops, big strong legs, and you know, was a force for sure, and definitely in the layup lines.
Was he one of those that probably or should have gotten more minutes or didn't get a chance to get a ton of minutes for just because we were so talented back then?
He's one of those guys that was in a weird spot in terms of height and position, ball handling, shooting, and like not – it wasn't a crowded roster so much. It's just – it was
– his position.
Never really found his spot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had – yeah, different guys. But I'll put Kirby in that thing too for a couple of years at Dunkers. But I think Kirby was so worried about his body, he wouldn't just go all out. But when he would dunk, he had one dunk against Marshall or somebody that may be the
crazy
best unseen dunk.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby in Virginia history. Kirby could have been the best in almost every category if he didn't play football. Like, he was that good. We've talked about it on podcasts before with the 17 points in 7 minutes and his dunks. Oh. But when he would come out of football, he wasn't in basketball shape, but he was explosive. Yep. And the, you know, the practice dunks that Kirby did were, you know, you were laying there at night thinking to yourself, man, how am I going to try to beat this guy out? He just dunked it behind his waist. Not behind your head.
Exactly.
He was legit.
Hey, what about
Rex? One more for you. Sneaky, sneaky good dunker. Big Red.
Oh, great dunker.
Right? The finger roll. Like, he
and
had
respect.
He had
Big That's Red right. He'd go up, lay it up, and pull it back.
Yeah. He was sneaky good pregame dunker for he's in the big guy category, but
I'll tell you what, I think June Junior might give it to Big Red because June always loved that. Yo, Red, do that again, Red. Do it again. That's a great call. Yep.
And I got to give a quick shout out to Big Red. 6 years ago, this past Friday, he passed away, which is a tough day for UVA basketball, and we all remember him and love him. So prayers up to Big Red. Prayers up to Carrie and Chloe and Claire. And their parents, it's, you know, someone that Doug and I loved deeply. Great guy, great player, great roommate. And, you know, that's something that every year it rolls around. And I think about him a lot. And I hope the UVA basketball community thinks about him a lot.
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can do an entire podcast about Big Red stories.
Maybe we should do that.
So we should.
If we bring it to today, what about on this current roster? Who was the best pregame dunker?
Oh, that's for
layup else. Line. Layup line. Gotta be Jay Huff. That'd be my guess.
The problem with a layup line dunker, it's like the dunk contest. Having someone above 6'8" dunk doesn't wow you.
Right.
But didn't he dunk it from the free throw line on video right after Zion did?
Nope. He dunked it very close from the free throw line. Yeah,
I remember that. I mean, he's got the hops for sure. And there is something to be said for when you do get a 7-footer who can fly like that. It doesn't look as cool as a 5'8" guy, like the Muggsy, you know, Spud Webster deal. But there is something when he did that, you're like, okay, like that's different for sure.
I mean, I've seen Kihei practice dunk. I haven't seen him do it in the layup line. He should maybe need to add that.
For current guys, I'm sorry, T-Dubs.
No, go ahead.
For recent current guys,
yeah,
I gotta believe, of course, Justin Anderson, right? Nigel Johnson. Nigel Johnson has to be one of the most phenomenal athletes I've ever seen.
Really, big dunker.
Phenomenal athlete, incredibly fast, so fast.
Like a defensive back type thing.
Like super superior defensive back.
Yeah. Right?
And then also he was a great leaper. Yeah. Phenomenal.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. What
about Ty Jerome's nasty dunks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I forgot Tybee sneak. Tybee's sneaking it over. Real nice. I'll tell you what, don't sleep on half. Don't sleep on you had some funk in your game, dude.
Yeah, you know.
No contest.
In my own category, I was deadly, but in that category is not the top category. So.
All right, we'll jump to a current. I kind of go back and forth. All right, what are real expectations for Casey Morsell's second year?
I think he's expected to play. He's expected to contribute right now. And I think confidence is going to be a big piece. He's coming off a tough year. And if he can, typically almost every second year has ups and downs.
Right.
If he can fight through the challenges, and if he can stay positive and healthy and shoot at least 35%, I think he's going to see a lot of minutes. He's such a great, he's such an awesome, exceptional on-ball defender. And if just stay confident.
See that point? Who do you know, like, or to any of you guys, I guess, is anyone in his ear? Because I agree. I think it's a mental thing. It's a confidence builder. But is there anyone, do you know, like, you just said Kia's kind of the leader off court, and have you just talked about that as well. But, like, who's eating lunch with him? Do you know if he has that clue? He's kind of settled in some guys that can kind of lift him?
I know there's been some communication with some former guys, with some guys who used to play. I can't say graduate because a lot of them, well, I want to say graduate, but left school early and are now playing in the, you know, professionally. And I know that there's been some talk back and forth, and those guys like him a lot. They think they respect him as a person. And I think he fits that UVA mold of just being selfless and respectful. I've heard guys say what a great kid he is. And I think, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to perform incredibly well, right? And almost every second year, when you look at guys, there's some struggle, right? Nobody's ever had a great, well, few people outside of maybe Ralph Sampson, Brian Stith, Malcolm, I guess, maybe had a really good second year. A lot of guys had long years. So again, if he can fight through those challenges, he's always going to contribute defensively. And with that backcourt of Kihei and Casey, they're not going to give up a lot of points to other guards. Like, I can't wait. If that Villanova game happens, watching the matchup between Kihei and the Villanova point guard, what's his name? His name escapes me right now.
Archie Diamaco. He's been the point guard for 15 years. Same guy. First name Archie, last name Diamaco.
You know what? I'm giving you the bell. You know, it wasn't a curse. Colin Gillespie. That matchup is going to be sensational. Those are two really good players, and they're going to go at it. But then you also have, you know, Villanova's got a really good squad, and it's going to be hard to score on UVA with those two guys. And just if Casey can get through that, shoot, just power through and shoot 35%, he's going to see a lot of minutes.
Yeah, I think you're right. What's a lot of minutes for Casey? Like, well, I don't know.
I think 25.
Yeah.
He's strong. You know he's strong. Yep. You know he's going to defend. You know he's going to rebound from the position. But it's going to be, as Mark said, you know, how does he do on the offensive end? Can he contribute? Can he be a threat as a guard, which you have to be? So I'm rooting for him. I think he's
got to be a threat.
So, sorry, just to build on that real quick, what, given a new makeup of this year's roster, what would be contributing for him? Are we talking, you know, it's a UVA lineup, so are we talking 6 points here? Because I agree with you 100%. I think defensively and all the other intangibles, he's got it. I guess what I'm saying is I wonder if he's not as needed offensively this year, as that could actually help him out a little bit. You know, whereas last year, everyone kind of thought he's going to be a Swiss Army knife. And this year, I mean, you have Hauser, you're going to have Huff, you're going to have an improved Kia's jump shot. Like, you know, points might be enough to put him over.
I don't even think it's the points. I think you got to be able to hit the open jump shot. Mm-hmm. Right? You got to be able to hit that and Tony Bennett's system. Right? And if he can get into get some paint touches and penetrate a little bit and knock down some dribble shots off the dribble, I think that's great. I agree. He doesn't need to score 12, 15 points. So if you're looking for an average, I say if he can average 7 to 9 points, I think that's contributing on the offensive side. And he'd really contribute a lot that way. But, you know, there could be games when he shoots, you know, 3 for 15 and scores 7 points, and that's not helpful.
All right.
Sure. Look, I'll tell you what, when I look at him, so when I went to the practice before the Louisville game, for the record, he was the only player that said what's up to me from the court. So he's got a special place in my heart. Trust me on that. Even Grant Kersey, my man, didn't even say hello to me. So I think he's very special. In a game where we need somebody to provide a spark, I think he can do it offensively. Like out of nowhere, makes a drive. Out of nowhere, one dribble, pull up, jumper. He's kind of Terry Kirby's half.
Yeah, in a weird way offensively. I agree. Look, there are teams that are going to double J, right? They're going to send him down there. You've got Hauser, who's drawn a lot of attention. Kihei's been around. He's drawn attention. His role, as Mark said, is you get nine points a game. Right. You make a couple threes and drive and play really good D. That's a good second year.
Yeah. Yep. That leads to the next question. And that last question was from Maurice. D Turn Got Soul on Twitter. But the next one is, what is the most efficient? What do you think the most efficient lineup will be down the stretch for these guys? This is from Leif Thulin.
Yeah, that's a leading question. That's tough for me.
Like down the stretch, what do you guys think will be the lineup that he goes with? And I don't know what he meant by down the stretch in the big game, down the stretch at the end of the season, but like what's the lineup you're going with at the end of the game? Like what do you guys think?
That's different than, and it's, you're right, T-Dubs, because that's different than the starting lineup at the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. It's funny. I can remember sitting here and listening to you guys on a podcast last year, and a similar question came up. And my first thought was, whatever their opening day starting lineup is, I can almost guarantee it's not going to be what the last game of the season is going to be. Right. And that's the exact same thing. And I think you're absolutely right, Mark. Who's going to court for the last 5 minutes is a very different question. Who's going to be starting against, I assume, Louisville for the sake of argument, the end of the season or first game in the ACC tournament.
It's loaded in a sense that it's like, it depends on the matchup and all of that. But let's just take a guess.
I'm going to say this. So I'm going to say, press pause on this question. Let us see them for a month, and we can come back and answer that. Because what we don't have a handle on is the new guys and their contributions. We're going off,
no clue.
Video, and there may be something lurking there that we don't know about. So I want to, and what's his name, Leif?
Yep.
Leif
has his own. He runs his own podcast. We'll link
Leif. Leif, we're coming back to you after a few weeks of seeing them play.
Wait a minute, Kev, I'm going to interject there. I'm going to disagree with you respectfully because you know how much respect I have for you. I'm going to say we know it's Kihei.
Yep.
Right? It's almost likely going to be Jay.
Sam
Hauser. Right? So.
Three.
What's that?
That's three, right? Two, three.
And I think it's either going to be, you can either go at Casey Thomas. And so what I'm hearing is that Reese Beekman is doing really well.
So is it Reese?
Strickland. I was gonna throw Reese in there too.
Reese Beekman, from what I understand, is gonna be.
Do we ever see Reese, Casey, and Kihei on the court at the same time?
I think so.
That's a good question. The problem with that is
I love that.
The problem with that lineup is I'm not sure what you're getting from the outside with that lineup.
I think Kihei's a vastly improved 3-point shooter. That's my
Let's say he shoots 35% from three, Kihei.
Yep.
It's harder to shoot threes off the dribble, right, than it is catch and shoot. So the ball's going to be in his hands mostly. Casey's got to prove he can shoot it. And Reese is, from what I understand, is a solid shooter, but not like a top-notch shooter.
Right.
So your problem with those three guys is, where's your outside shoot? Where's your consistent outside shooting coming from?
Hauser.
Right, but then that's only one guy.
Sure.
All right.
And from what I hear, Hauser, if he gets his feet set, it's automatic.
I actually love the question from Leaf for making us think so much. And I've thought about it a lot and I got nervous about it because I don't have an answer. I'm going to throw one back at you. I'm going to throw one back at you, Leaf. Where's the stock market going to be in 2025?
How about after the election, Dougie?
Yeah.
Right? Next week. Let's talk about
how about next week?
How about next Wednesday?
How about tomorrow?
Oh, God.
Right? Oh, that. What about? Is Jay
it's that kind of question, right?
Hey, we got to get Leaf on the airway.
Yeah,
now.
First we got to get all, Leaf.
I agree. If he's a podcast,
his name is Leaf. His name is Leaf, so we got to get the story behind that, number one.
Just and start.
Number two, you know, he asked a good, thoughtful question, so maybe we'll have him back.
Yeah, we'll have him back. But that leads me to, I'll riff off of that one. Is Jay Huff penciled in? Because his minutes have been spotty his whole career, right? Even last year, he, you know, 17 in a row to start the game and then nothing. And then
I've said it before, I'll say it again. He needs to not go to church so much during the season. And that's it. He's such a well rounded guy, right? Like,
you're nice.
He's got so much energy. I guess it's just like, I mean, look, you've gone to church enough. I've gone to church enough. Trust me, I'm good. I'm sorry. That's not nice.
Do we need to, Fresh, do I need to go down there and take him out on the old tour? Maybe get him out and about a little bit?
He just got engaged. He's a married man, Hav.
Yeah, he's married.
I'm not sure. Oh, he's married.
He's married. That changes it a little bit.
Well,
not,
then in that case, we go to Ruby Tuesdays for the endless salad bar, which is a wild night out.
And then you look to your left and Junior's got the chicken wing special going.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious as to the Jay Huff development year five.
I'll jump in. I think Jay had his moments, right? He's had some great games and he's had some moments where he hasn't been as impressive. I think he's following a path of, I think, a lot of guys that have really good, good college careers. He is very skilled. And I think at the end of the day, ACC is such a skilled league that he will shine this year because of his ability to go inside, outside. I think he'll always, rebound and block shots and protect the rim a bit. I think he's going to have a really good year. And he's, one of those elusive people that has not left after a year or two or three. You know, he's been there. He is sort of the father time of UVA basketball right now. And I think he's going to have a big year.
Wait a minute. Let me add a question to that. Since you just said he's a father time, does he come back next year?
Well, that goes back to our, no, I would say no, because I think he's too good. He's got to go. Here's a better question. If he has a bad year or gets injured, does he come back next year? And that's where the whole recruiting thing with the extra year of eligibility plays a monstrous role for all of these programs.
If he were to come back for a sixth year, he would be 23-ish?
24.
22? 24?
Yeah, whatever it is. I think
24. How many 24-year-olds are going to the league?
24 at that point. Right.
I mean –
Well, do you expect him
at some point you hurt your opportunity for the league, right?
That's what I'm getting at.
Do you guys think he's good enough for the league?
I do. I'll say.
Do you?
Yeah.
I hope he is. I don't know.
He could sneak onto a roster maybe, but I don't see him getting picked up.
I see him playing because he's – how tall is he? Like official height.
7'1".
7'1". He's 7'1" and can shoot. And when you become a professional athlete, you don't have class. You don't have, you all of a sudden becomes, think of, and I look at I look at Joe Harris, right? Joe is a really great player at UVA. But was he a deep threat, pure three-point shooter, knockdown, dead-eye? No, he drove, he pulled up. He was more of a score. He could shoot, but he morphed into a deadly three-point shooter. with the trend in the NBA of these big guys pulling away from basketball and positionless basketball, I think his stock, you know, in 1990, when he had all these great centers, he'd be forced to be down low. He's coming out at the right time. And I think with his skill set, he'll show really well, not only this year in the during the season, but also in the postseason workouts when he's knocking down threes. And you know he's working on that because you know he knows that about himself already. So I think he'll play in the league, and I think he'll play in the league for a while.
I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'd love to see Jay make the league.
By the way, have how about going back? I'm thinking about Big Red and Jay Huff. Big Red's 15-foot turnaround from the free throw line, never missed.
It was analogous to Kareem Skyhook.
Exactly.
Indefensible and money. And by the way, very unexpected. Soft, never hit rim, high arc.
So soft. Such nice touch.
When he checked into the UNC game, TJ got in foul trouble and hit two jumpers in 30 seconds against King Rice and Rick Fox and that team. They were worried. It was nasty.
Big Red.
Shout out Big Red.
And then the next question. You guys are going to love this one. Who's likely to commit to the Cavs? Caleb Houston, Trevor Keels, Efton Reed, Trey Kaufman, none of the above.
Yes, yes, yes. Three for three.
I think Leaf might commit after the amount of airtime he's given them. That question by Leaf?
That question was by Jeff Messler.
Oh, Jeff. I don't know the answer to that question.
I say Kaufman.
You got that one.
No, I say Kaufman and Keels. That's my prediction, and I know absolutely zero.
Doug, you're becoming an expert on recruiting.
Hey, I'm reading the tea leaves, Marty.
You gone deep. Martin, in this.
No, I am. I read the tea leaves with me and Dragon. Read the tea leaves.
So you think?
And by the way, I won't.
Don't throw my name in that one. I just browse them.
I read the tea leaves. HGN is phenomenal. Like the things he, like the way he looks at it, and this, that, and the other. You get all upset, but I would really like to know what was going on during my decision back in Virginia and what the boards looked like talking about me. Like, is it going to be Arkansas State, Northwest Louisiana Tech, Texas A&M, Nebraska? Like, why is he in Nebraska for a visit? Why is he partying at Texas A&M?
Because if you go to Omaha and Jonesboro and Charlottesville and you pick any city that's not Charlottesville, there's something wrong with you. I'm just saying it right now.
That's what you know. I told you Charlottesville was my worst visit. It was awful.
Yeah, I
went to a movie with Matt Blunden.
Yeah.
I'm going to say
part of your recruitment was based on your hair. Let's just get that out of the way at the time. We covered that already, though.
All right. And we've talked about this before. It was also you trying to figure out my ethnicity.
Yeah, I was stymied. I felt perplexed and bamboozled.
And
Boston guys.
I want to give another answer to that question. And I think if things become so much more complicated for some of the top players with the winter athletes been approved for additional year.
Yeah.
If I'm a top player, I'm going to likely at least strongly consider a school like Kentucky, Duke, where there's a lot of movement with freshman and sophomore. So I don't have to wait. But now I don't know who's coming back after next year.
And
I think that makes things a little bit more difficult for like a UVA, which is a top school developing players from their first year through their second and third year, where guys are starting to go to the league after 3 or 4 years versus guys who are moving after 1 or 2 years. I don't think that
I tell you, gives us Mark, what do you guys think from a coaching standpoint, right? Like, so let's say Coach K, Cal, they get it. You're 1, 2, and done. Coach Bennett, he's his way. Other guys are their way. Do you think that they want the kids to have the choice, or do you think they just want them to, like, let's go? Like, I'm used to this first, second, third, maybe fourth year. Keep it moving. Like, do you think they want the kids to stay, or
at UVA?
Not so much. Anywhere.
At UVA, I think they do. I think they want kids there for 4 years.
Right? No, for four, I think
the conversation, yeah, in the conversation with the players, each one is unique. But for the most part, it's like, we'd love for you to stay. And if they thought a kid was ready, I don't think they're going to hold him back. Like Dre, I don't think the conversation was, hey, Dre, come back. Come on, come back next year. Look what we could do. We'll have a special group again. We could repeat as national champions. I don't think that was part of the conversation. And I can tell you about the conversation with Ty. I heard about the conversation with Kyle. I'm not going to repeat it because I don't know for sure what it was.
Right.
But I think it's weighing the pros and the cons, right? Mm-hmm. Versus other schools. And I hear it's like, at some of these top tier schools, it's like, you got 1 year or 2 years at max here, and then we're pushing you out. You're not staying 3 to 4 years.
Right. Yeah, that's my point. You're being pushed out.
Yeah. You got a 2 year window at some of these schools.
Yep.
So I hope that answered your question, Dougie.
It does. I'm more thinking about, do you think coaches want to like keep it moving, whether it's a 2 year or a 4 year, just because that's what we do. We've always done this. We build our programs from the bottom up, top down, whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. At their pace.
At their pace. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
I think it's really going to challenge, you know, like Mark said, the Dukes, Kentuckys, the programs that are bringing kids in, you know, the top guys know where they're going. But think about a guy like Gordon Hayward, all right? Not highly recruited. Goes to Butler, you know, in the current environment, you know, say he came to UVA, it really changes everything. And it's hard for those 4 year guys who might become a pro after 4 years of development or a pro after 3 years of development. You know, Mark, you look at Ty, you know, freshman year when you looked at him or senior year in high school, he was not a definite 100% NBA player. He turned into one through a lot of hard work and, you know, your tutelage and Tony and the program. But those are the kids I think that will have a harder time. And Ty's an exception. I'm just using him as an example of, you know, he wasn't Zion coming out. It's going to be complicated, and schools are going to come up with policies, and administrations will have influence for sure. And the academic rigors of college will, you know, take place and things happen, but it's going to be different moving forward.
Right. But I can tell you something else. If you take a guy like Chris Havlicek and you can tell him he can come back every year, he's still be at the University of Virginia playing basketball. he would just be taking that scholarship and like, all right, I'm back. What's the guy's name? Melon from Back to School.
It would have gotten awkward when my kids were ball boys and ball girls at the games. But other than that, I would have stayed.
I'm telling you guys, I'm envious of you guys. You guys were that good to play at UVA.
Oh, man. Well, you should have been there with us, Mark. You'd look a lot more tired if you had been there with us. That's for sure.
If I were good enough, I absolutely would have been there.
All right.
You're all UVA now, dude.
We'll jump to the next one from UVA underscore who's. I like that name. What are your statistical predictions for each of our highly touted freshmen? And that.
Wow.
Yeah, that one's tough. I don't know. That's Reese, Jabri, and.
Carson?
Yeah, McCorkle.
Oh, yeah, McCorkle. Oh, man.
Dragon, take that. You're probably the most technically skilled guy. Oh, man,
that's tough.
Group,
I mean,
outside of TW.
Jeez. Yeah, that's super tough right there.
Just give us the plus minus. No, I'm kidding.
I don't even know what that is when I waited for it in the stat sheet. I told you I'm old. I don't understand that stuff. I don't do saber metrics. But, I mean, Reese is probably the most playing time. You know, if he can give us 5 to 7 points and just quality minutes of just showing that he's grasping the offense and grow into a player as we move into the ACC, I think that'll be great. Are we sure McCorkle's playing this year? I thought I had heard rumors that he may redshirt, but I could be 100% off on that. Who knows what I read that on? Rumors, innuendo. And Jabri, you know, I mean, he's got all the talent in the world. He can score the ball for sure, but I have no idea how they're going to deploy him, having not seen anything. Kind of to have a check point earlier, I need to see a little bit of I don't know what our rotations are going to be. I mean, I've seen nothing of this team. I haven't even seen a clip that came out today on the internet. So, yeah.
We need to put him in the same category with our boy Leaf, which is, hey, great question. You got to give us a little time to see them. And maybe and we'll revisit.
I'm going to make one prediction.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark. I was just going to ask.
I rarely make predictions, right? I just, from what I'm hearing, Reese is playing really, really, really well. So I'm going to predict that he gets at least 15 minutes a game, at least at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And if he continues to play well, he'll play more. Obviously, I'm not, you know, I think he averages between 3 and 4 assists, low turnover ratio. Yep. And I think he scores 4 to 6, 4, 5 points a game.
I like it. All year.
Good take.
I'll tell you what, who's got next told me today that Reese playing AAU is
EYBL. Yeah.
He had a 7-to-1 turnover to assist turnover ratio. And that's a wide open game, right, Mario? Like, you know it better than anybody here.
That's the best of the best. EYBL.
How's that possible?
And it's
how are you 7-to-1? You're making a lot of good passes.
Yeah.
Well, and never turning it over.
So according to Jay Willie, this kid is delivering the ball precisely at the right time in the perfect position for the guys to his teammates to catch and shoot it or make a play. And that's just poise. That's just IQ.
And that's a skill.
And to shoot it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And also not turning it over. He's not turning it over.
Right. If you don't turn the ball over in TV system, you got a chance to play, right? And if you can knock down some shots. As your guard, don't turn the ball over.
Yep.
All right. So you think Jabri and Carson. Yeah, I was just gonna say you think Reese will be the better and he's gonna average around 5-6 points a game.
I think
4-to-6, you said, right?
4-to-6. And 4-to-4 assists.
I'm not sure the point average matters.
Yeah, it doesn't. I was just gonna give you a point of reference. Kihei Clark, first year, 4.5 points. Ty Jerome, first year, 4.3. London Parentes, first year, 5.5 points a game. So
that's a lot, though.
Didn't London have company. Like a 4-1 turnover ratio as well, to Dougie's point? Wasn't his turnover assist ratio something like 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 that freshman
year? His first year?
3.8 to 1. Yeah.
3.8 to 1. That's remarkable.
Yeah, I remember it being like that was like the thing that stood out about him to me was that.
Tell him who led the ACC in assist turnover ratio 1993.
Doug Smith. Dougie Fresh.
Yep. Even if I did. I think I did. It was like 2.7 to 3.
you don't see it a lot, but when you do, you gotta hold on to it.
It's inverted, exactly.
And then next question from Two Guard Fresh, why are you still in 1993? No, I made that one up. All right, next one from Dan Epstein for the mailbag. What do outsiders think of UVA basketball, whether you've talked to players, coaches, media, fans of other schools? What is the general perception is the first part, and the second part, will that be different after this season? Then, what about you guys? You guys, have you talked to other coaches? What are their thoughts on Virginia?
I have. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll be last. Go ahead.
I can speak as the guy who didn't go to UVA, who went to Xavier, which has its own basketball tradition, but knowing that fan base pretty well and knowing, you know, not as close to the staff anymore as I used to be, but you know, there's always that respect for Virginia. I feel like we get the respect of, you know, Tony Bennett is probably one of the most, if not the most respected coach in the game right now, just because of who he is. The culture is respected, but I feel like the knock is always going to be, there's still a little bit of a, they don't belong. You know, I still feel like they don't get the love of a blue blood just yet. They haven't quite earned those stripes, and people kind of still look at that championship as fluky or weird. And, you know, and now it's down here at a Hawks game in Atlanta, watching Ty and Dre play, as a matter of fact, and had some guy in a UNBC shirt talking trash to me. So I think that's still, you know, unfortunately, that's still the moniker on them. And then, you know, the actual fans can scratch below that surface and be like, oh, actually, they're doing, you know, defensive ratings and all those stats just don't come across in ESPN to the standard fan. And, you know, right. It's a little bit different when you talk to coaches and players, obviously.
What about you, Mark? When you're talking to people on the AAU circuit?
So coaches, college coaches, high school coaches, AAU, everybody. I'm very careful to, first of all, to group everyone in the same category, right? And anything, right? I'm just not going to do that.
Yep.
As far as, you know, the perception prior to winning, first of all, like, UVA was the last team to win a national championship. No one can take that away. And I think for the last several, years, Tony Bennett has been perceived as salt of the earth, but couldn't win. And now he's won and he's salt of the earth and he's done it without cheating. Right. So he's proven that he can take a team, lead a team of kids that aren't one and done, because that's not who he's dealing with. And that's not who he's necessarily recruiting, and develop guys and make them champions. So he's proven that he's could really coach his tail off. Right. And I think that that's where, prior to Ty committing, it was, oh, good. Or when he did commit, good fit. That's a great fit. That's a great fit. And I was like, I didn't really follow Virginia that much. I knew Mike Toby from New York, so I was happy to just recruit. And I knew they were like a top tier team. And then when they went to, you know, had a chance to go to the Final Four in 2015, I was so excited. But people saying that's a good fit, truthfully, I think they were code word for, you know, they play slow and they play methodically. Right. And your kid is slow. Yeah. And your kid is really slow. Right. So he fits in. But they also play smart. And I think that they were also saying that. And they shoot the ball fairly well. And of course, everybody knows they play team defense. But it's still not, I agree with B-Jags, it's not the blue blood. They weren't considered a blue blood. Yeah. I don't think UVA is still considered quite a blue blood. It's not Kentucky. It's not Duke. It's not Arizona. It's not, I think, Kansas, right? Those are the four blue bloods for me that I would consider that are consistently and traditionally been blue bloods forever. But I think they're more, you know, UVA and Michigan State, where guys are just, where the coaching is so above par and the coaching staff, well, there's been some accusations against Michigan State, but the coaching staff at UVA has now seemed as exceptional. And when you look at, I think now people are saying, okay, the top tier AAU programs, okay, you guys won a national chip. That's cute. But how many guys are you sending to the league? Because that's the main thing that they're concerned about, the top tier AAU programs. They don't care. Like a lot of the EYBL teams, they're concerned about getting guys to the league because that's how they continue their sponsorship. They get re-sponsored and they renegotiate their sponsorship for $50,000 every year. If they send guys to the league and if those guys sign Nike sponsorships, Nike sneaker sponsorships, and they become big time players, right? So great, you guys won a national chip. But now, okay, you won a chip and you sent three guys to the NBA and won the same year. That can't be taken away, right? So now I think UVA's looked at a little bit differently. Maybe, you know, it's not the one and dones, but they win. And don't forget, last year may have been the coaching staff's best job. Right. You lost three NBA players and you lost a big guy in Jack Salt. You lost four major contributors and you came back and you still came in second place in the ACC and you were on a roll and everybody would have been scared to play you in the national in the tournament. Right. So I think people are starting to look at UVA a little differently. And here's the last piece I'll say is TB has shown a penchant for adapting and adjusting. Right. Because he wasn't running the same sets in last year or the year UVA won as he was at the end of the year, as he was in the beginning of the year and the year before, right? There were a lot more high ball screens. There was a lot more action. There was a lot more movement. There was a lot more point guard play off the pick and roll. And I think that if people are truly the savvy fan, the sophisticated fan, if they're really studying the offense, they're looking at it differently than they may have looked at it 4 years ago, right? And we even talked about it on the Jay Willie show last week with London and saying, London, you know, you didn't really have the high ball screens. And London was sort of saying if he did, he would have, you know, he would have used that a little bit more to his advantage.
Yeah. Well, I would, you're obviously 1,000% right. I would semi-tweak that. And what I saw from Ty's team that won it all, I felt like the players took over. Like, we can do this. And Tony, to his credit, trusted it. And I always saw Tony that year, like, looking back to Jason, looking back to the assistants, the other guys, and like, is this right? Yeah, it's right. Go, go, go. So to everybody's credit, that shit works, right?
Yeah, and I'd add one thing, you know, and Mark touched on it. What made that year so special in winning was, number one, it came on the heels of UNBC. But, you know, Virginia, by winning that championship and then sending three guys to the league, gets us near blue blood, right? We need to do that more, okay? If we want to be blue blood or recognized as blue bloods, and I would add Michigan State to that mix because they're constantly in the Final Four. That's who I kind of would add to it. But, you know, Carolina, Duke, Kansas, Michigan State, Arizona, like they're always up there. We're in that category now. We just have to do it for a little bit longer. We've got the right coach. We've got the right program. Our style is different, but guess what? No one grades you on style if you win. It's not as appealing as seeing Zion fly, you know, get way above the block and throw it down. But I think we have a sustainable platform for success with the coaching staff and the style of play. And Doug made a great point, the ability to adapt, right? The great coaches adapt. You think of Krzyzewski. He saw what Calipari was doing and adapted and said, one and done. Oh, yeah. You know, I can do that now. So it'll evolve, but I know the foundation's going to be, you know, great defense and recruiting great kids.
I think the biggest thing that hits me from watching Virginia play basketball in games, I do not think there's one team excited to go play them. For UNBC, they were ecstatic and they beat our ass. I don't think you see Carolina, dude. They just want to get out of the gym. Like, this is not fun. It's not my basketball. Duke, I think, might like it, but I think you don't like that game on your schedule. Louisville? Ty Jerome owned Louisville.
Bennett does. Bennett hasn't lost to Louisville. Did he lose one time this year?
Rick Pitino said, go. Tony, go to the NBA, please, bro. Yeah. Bennett, get out of my league.
They lost to Louisville once this year, and I think that was the first loss in like 7 or 8 tries or something like that. Like, it's been a minute.
Yeah. People don't want to play us.
That's very true.
I agree with that, Dougie. People are not seeing Virginia UVA and on the schedule. That's a win. It's the opposite.
It's funny. I would almost dare say that UVA is a bully team. And, you know, sometimes they get this knock of being like, oh, they're not tough. They, you know, they play this weird style, but it's like, to me, I'm like, they're actually the aggressors because they force you to play Virginia basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, we could probably name 5 times in the last 5 years they get into this run and gun stuff. They don't. You play their style. You know,
in the last 4 years, how many games has UVA gotten their butts beat?
Only a couple times.
I can think of Carolina at Carolina.
Purdue at Purdue this past year. They blew the doors off of
us. And this was a tough year, right? Because
that's set up for failure right there.
Yeah.
Florida
and the NCAA tournament 2016. UNBC, Carolina that year.
I feel like
of too many
that
games.
15, what's that, 15 or 16 when they lost that, or 7, whatever the year, the Florida game. It's kind of the last year that you saw them get hammered, really, like get their doors blown off outside of maybe one other time. It just, you're right, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. I mean,
before that, it was Tennessee, right? The infamous Tennessee game.
I was going to say, TW, was that the... That might be the whole turning point of like the 20-minute era.
Yeah, Joe Harris jumps in his car, goes to TB's house, and
got floored, 38 points or whatever it was.
How's that possible? It was like 30, the doors blown off that game.
I don't think I watched it.
I've forgotten about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, that was an ugly one, man. It was. I think it was after that. London got the keys.
Was it?
Yep.
That makes sense.
Next game was Florida State. And then in London,
yeah,
he said
he got the keys to start the ACC season on Jay Willis shows. Yeah. That makes sense then.
Yeah. Not to be negative on other players. Who was the point guard before London?
It was John Tell Evans and Tevin Jones, right? Directly prior to that.
Okay.
Right, and then obviously it's been, John Tell was like, he's polarizing. Great defense, incredible on-ball defense.
Oh, that's right.
Great hustle, super sweet. Could not shoot, couldn't score, and it was like the antithesis of what UVA wanted in terms of like point guards, like scoring, doing the thing. And then it was like,
he controlled the ball well. Man.
He did. He did a lot well. But like in terms of like an introduction to Tony Bennett, that was kind of like on steroids because he was like about defense and that's what John Tell was about. And he was not scoring well, but TB didn't care because he's on balls. And that just like made everything seem gimmicky with that. I don't know.
Well, that's why Kihei got his big shot too, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Same thing. Well, how about the consistency at the point guard spot? I just thought about this when we just started. Running back. I mean, it's almost like a football program keeping a quarterback for 4 years. I mean, there's been essentially two and a half, three point guards. Because even by, I guess Ty and Kia kind of split it a little bit, but still, I mean, he is essentially a 3-year starter now. Before that, London was a 4-year starter.
John Tell was 4 years.
Right, exactly. Like, how many schools can still claim that? And like, how much of an advantage is that to just?
No doubt.
I mean, it's a guard, it's an oriented game, and he does keep it consistent with guards and coaching staff too. That's another big one, right? His staff has been pretty consistent.
And that goes back to Dragon's question earlier about leadership. It's like Ty's telling, Kia, yo, bro, I'm out. You better handle this shit.
Right.
Yeah.
You think Kia doesn't listen to Ty? Absolutely. Probably started from me when I'd pass the keys to Corey and then on Singletary. Sorry.
Hey, no joke. I was about to say, it made me think, who were the point guards when I was there? So it was Crotty, Doug Fresh, and Corey Alexander. That's a great run right there. So
not a bad group.
followed by Dino.
And Dino. He was a point, but he was a scoring point.
But he became the point. Yeah,
not true. It's a Curtis. Yeah,
he wasn't a pure point guard.
Yeah, but I mean, you go back to. I really start thinking about Virginia with Othell Wilson.
Yeah,
and then you just go right through, and it's all we've had really good guards, and it's.
But have you ever seen a more perfect point guard than Corey Alexander? See, and I'm not. He was just like a perfect point guard in every way.
In terms of speed and athleticism,
style
and skill.
Points, speed, two dribble, pull up, buckets. If he wants dunk it, he'll dunk it. If he wants to lay it up and smack the backboard, he'll do that.
I would say
so good. And I remember, Corey and Travis Best were the two point guards coming out that year. And Travis was from my area that I played against him. He was always a younger guy, but really good.
And visited us.
And I remember thinking, Travis Best is good, and you guys are going to see him. And he went to Georgia Tech, and then we got, Corey, who I didn't play against growing up, and I was like, wow. And, size, strength, just just a great player. And by the way, Fresh, you gave him a hell of a run his freshman year.
I tried.
But you were right there, dude. It's not just me being friendly. Like, that was a battle. That was a battle. And nobody won because you played a lot and had huge moments your fourth year. But Corey was special. And Corey got hurt, you know, my fifth year. He broke his foot and missed that year. And we would have been really good that year. But it allowed the other guys to develop.
My memory was the knock on Corey was always almost like London, which he was so smooth that people took that for being cavalier in that sense, right? It's like, oh, he's too cool for this. Like, he's trying to look cool. He's not trying to be. And then Harold Dean was such the opposite, like that blue collar diving on the floor, my guns, like,
right.
You know, he was so different than Corey, and Corey was very smooth and calm and composed, and people took that for he didn't care. And like, I feel like London suffered from that as well, which a lot of people were like, yo, hurry up, like, why are you acting like this? We're down 10 with five.
That's how I was in London for sure.
And he knew that was his style and what worked for him, but for a lot of people, I feel like they always jump.
I'm telling you, I'll go forever to say that I think London love to be down to show that he can come back and win. I'm not kidding. I don't think he wanted to win by fit. Like, yo, we're down by 10. Watch this. Snoop Dogg.
He was amazing at that. I mean, if you're down five, 2 minutes left, and you're like, oh my God, got to score. And he's slowly dribbling up, and everyone is like, what the hell are you doing here?
He's driving and he crazy. Just,
yeah. And he would pull it out. Dragon? Like, we didn't lose many games with him.
No, I mean, he was one of the most nerve-wracking players for me to watch.
Yes.
Like, I wanted to go. I was like, let's go. Where's the urgency? Right. But, like, then he would come through, and I was just – and watching him – I think I said on one of the message boards, like, watching him progress from the guy who was averaging 3 or 4 assists to one a turnover to becoming the scorer, becoming the leader of that team by his fourth year is one of the best transformations I think I've seen in Virginia, to be perfectly honest with you. And I was just like, he made me like his game. He made me have to salute him to this day. I mean, he was a beast out there.
So
there are certain guys, and I put, you know, we were talking about Corey. I mean, Corey looked smooth when he woke up and went to brush his teeth in the morning. You know, and
that's so true.
He didn't have to look like he was exerting.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's his
thing,
right?
To exert. You know, if we were running on the track and, you know, I'm running my hardest and, you know, limbs are flying everywhere, Corey is just right next to you, just doing his run, and he's right there. He just was a effortless athlete and a special athlete.
Oh, yeah. Nope. I can remember my last one with Corey. Little 12-year-old Dragon, I think it was, give take-ish, was right when he broke his foot. He was out that year. And, my mom's a dean at the school, and I thought he was the coolest guy to ever grace God's green earth. He just had such a swag to him. And I'll never forget.
He was going
to visit my mom at work for some reason. It wasn't a snow day or something. And I was at her office, and he's out there in the hallway. He's got the boot on, looks like $1 million, and like, you know, like, he was just in like tracksuit sweats and his number threes, as we would call. And I got his autograph, and I was just like, that's where I want to be. That's what I want to be. I want to learn how to be just that cool one day when I'm on the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny.
He still does.
Abdullah, shout out Abdullah. He was our photographer for the banner ceremony. And he's not a Virginia fan. He didn't know any of it. He just came to take the photos and just hang out. And at the end of the weekend, he's like, the only time I was starstruck was meeting Corey Alexander. And he met everyone, right? Tony Bennett, everybody. And he was like, oh, Corey had me really nervous and he just has that effect. He's like, oh, as a kid, I remember him. I always thought he was cool. I didn't know nothing about him. I just thought he was cool. And it's just like, that's just so, you know, I guess it's just prevalent.
And I'll tell you guys, and we've probably talked about it. So when I get together with Corey and other fellas, he has the greatest memory in the history of Virginia ex-athletes. He's like, do you remember that bicycle test we had where the curve was 54? June, you had this, I had this, whatever. I was like, Corey, what are you talking about, bro? He didn't forget anything. Nothing. He's like, Fresh, because I never partied. I never, you know, Corey.
And you guys have seen him on TV. He's just the same way on TV. Mm-hmm. He's smooth.
Yep.
He always looks great, to be Dragon's point. And Corey was a hit with the co-eds. I'll just say that.
Yes.
You can leave it at that. We have any? I think that's it. I think those are. There is one last one, of course. We'll end it, of course. Who's got next mailbag? So if you had to pick a recruit in 21 or 22 that isn't on the radar that you think would fit, who would that be?
I'm going to say there's a obscure point guard from Fayetteville, Tennessee that everybody's overlooking.
Yes.
And they should probably look at him. Otherwise, I have no clue.
There's also a guy. There's also a guy named Leaf in North Carolina. He's a 6'11" two guard from Sweden. He's a Swedish sensation, and you know he hasn't hit the international radar yet. But I think we'll see big things from Leaf in the future.
That might be a question for Coach Phony Bennett.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
As he continues to receive the highlight reels of different players around the country.
Shout out, Phony. Let's hope he's doing well with his surgery.
Yep.
T-Dub, I got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I live in Florida. We have, it is largely what I would call a football baseball state for youth sports. But there's a lot of athletes down here. Does UVA recruit Florida heavily, and have we had some players from Florida that have done some things for the program?
I can't think of too many that are in the Florida.
I can't think of a Florida guy, but I mean, you
would have better. A lot of them go to Florida, yeah. And they always have some good, big, rangy guys, and it's a big state, so you've got, you know, Miami to sort of Jacksonville and then over to the Panhandle. It's a large area. I don't know how hard we recruit it. And maybe that's a Jay Willie show question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we haven't landed a ton of Florida recruits, and maybe that's part of it. Is it because we don't hit the ground there very hard? Or maybe there's something there that they don't technically.
There's a couple of good coaches down there. I mean, I wouldn't want to have to, you know, Larry Nager's still down there in Miami. You got, he's drawing a blank on FSU's coach right now. But I mean,
and it's an ACC Hamilton state now.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a good question. I wonder why we don't hit that state hard. Or maybe we do. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Dougie, go ahead. I think Dougie, I heard Dougie say once that a lot of Florida guys have their hands out.
Yeah, that's probably possible.
Escalade.
It could be. I asked the question. No,
I'll tell you a story from our time, Hav.
I'm kidding.
When me and you were doing the basketball camp, I know, basketball camps together, the whole thing. And I was at like, not five star, but something like that. And you had your teams, and there was one team from Florida. Every dude was like 6'4 to 6'6. They were ridiculous. And we're saying, who are these guys? And they're like, it doesn't matter. They play football and baseball.
Yeah.
They're just here for fun.
No, it's true.
Athleticism, right? I mean, you know,
football here is huge. If you're like a 6'5 guy that's skinny and fast, and you know, in most other states, you get shoehorned into basketball early. Here,
yep.
You get into your football, and you know you go to the high school football games here. Every starting wide receiver at the big schools is going to a Power Five conference, and they're going to start as freshmen. There's a great tradition of receivers out of this area, and I'm sure that they're great basketball players. They just focus on football, so maybe that has something to do with it.
I was just going to say that, I was just going to ask. Do you guys remember how many great players are in the ACC that come from Florida? I mean, offhand, I can think of Grayson Allen, Jonathan Isaac.
I can.
From Florida State.
I'll give you some from our era. So Chris Corciani at NC State, who was a great player and had the NCAA assist record for a long time.
He was probably good in football, too.
Yeah, he was from Miami. But when we played Florida State, they had Doug Edwards, who was a great player.
Yep. Dobard? Was Dobard from?
Rodney Dobard was from Florida. And the other guy I'm thinking about was Corciani, Doug Edwards, Dobard for sure. This is old school, and he had a memorable haircut, and you guys will remember him, but Dwayne Shinsis.
Right.
Was a big guy, and he went to UF. But Tampa has a lot of good players. I mean, I just read the local news. There's a lot of players in that Tampa area.
Yep.
But, cool. You know, we'll bring that up with Jay Willie for sure.
There was the kid that we talked about before that almost that came on the visit and fell asleep on his visit that came to Andrew DeClercq. Was that DeClercq?
Oh, yeah, Andrew DeClercq. He ended up going to Florida.
I remember that because I went to school in Tampa and did some reporting.
Was he from Florida?
Yeah.
I had him as, I told you, he was I was the host.
Yeah, I remember that's what I remember yeah, about
that's
falling
right.
asleep.
Yeah.
I'll throw in one last question. This one's for Dragon. What can we be doing better in terms of locker room access? And you can throw us under the bus. It's fine.
Oh, man. No. I mean, it's funny because I really avoid the boards for the most part. And you guys, this locker room access was the first one I jumped onto. And I was like, all right, this is actually a good vibe here. And it doesn't go too far into the weeds and doesn't just become a bunch of speculations and rumor and innuendo. So I appreciate that. You know, personally, being a football guy, I would love to see us, you know, ramp up a little bit more. I think we've done a lot with Ball Hawk and them, so I think that's great. But a little bit more coverage on that would be awesome.
Cool.
Overall, though, I think you guys are really, you know, doing a great job. I've been in this game for a long time and worked for a lot of sites and logged on a lot of sites. So you guys are doing a great job. I think it's great. I think we need to get basketball going again. For that, we can stop focusing on 9,000 hours of recruiting speculation.
Yeah, Kiel's
16-year-olds Instagram accounts and start analyzing games. But
I think that'll help.
That's not your guys' fault. So once that happens, I think everything will kind of fall back into place, and you know, I think we'll be set.
And what we've been sort of batting around ideas in terms of what type of podcast, what kind of cadence do you like, what is your listening cadence like generally?
I try to catch Jay Willie's show every week. I try to, you know, I can usually get in like 1 to 2 podcasts a week in general, just between, you know, while I'm at work and stuff like that, just between
life.
Yeah, basically. I don't get to listen to as much as I used to. You know, but it also just depends on how relevant and what time of year it is too. You know, I definitely bow out of stuff and I don't listen to as much in July because, you know, granted it's a little bit awkward this year because July was so strange this year, but in general, I kind of listen to what's in season. So as we sort of rolling into football season, Ball Hawk became something that I wanted to know more about and see where we're going. Same thing with basketball. But yeah, I think you guys have done some great stuff. I know, I sent a note to Mark, I think it was, after you guys did the right from George Floyd and all of that. And that was just a tremendous, tremendous podcast. And I give you all you guys credit for taking on that issue and not shying away from it. And you had a great panel of guests there. So that was really cool. That was really just something that was really cool. My wife and I watched that together. And I just really appreciated that you guys have done a lot of stuff for social justice and a lot of stuff for the community. And being from Charlottesville, seeing you guys reach out and do things in that town means a lot to me. That's always going to be home. The Commonwealth's always going to be home for me. So that means a lot as well. So, yeah.
That's great.
Good stuff.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, Bill. That's awesome.
All right. Well, that's a good way to end it. So we'll have, obviously, the full blog will be up on the site, which I have completely different stuff. I think Mark Fresh answered that as well. And then Who's Got Next will give you the real recruiting news as opposed to the stuff that we just spewed out of our mouths. I think that's it, right? Anything else, Mark?
That's all I got. Follow us. Check us out.
Yeah.
On our different social media platforms.
And Phony Bennett will be back next week.